As we study and understand the seven synonyms through the infinite ideas which express them, we are awakening ourselves to our real and true Christ selfhood. Order and differentiation characterize a system. Researching the seven synonyms for God in Science and Health, we find Mrs. Eddy has stated them in a specific order, according to the Word order, or the Christ order, or the Christianity order. There is no science without a system. A system calls for order and diversification. In mathematics, the usefulness of the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. derives from both their order and their distinctness. Mrs. Eddy was divinely led to put the seven synonyms in a particular order. Mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, found in Science and Health on page 465 as the Word order. Science and Health also gives a Christ order of the synonyms, found on page 115, and a Christianity order, found on page 587. Mrs. Eddy also makes it clear that spirit diversifies by defining each synonym in the Word order very distinctly from any other synonym. Thus we have mind, characterized as creative ability or conception. Spirit, reality, only. Soul, identity. Principle, classification. Life, individuality. Truth, consciousness. Love, unity with God. The synonyms are also characterized as law, order, rule, system, method, form, plan, or design, and as, quote, wisdom, purity, spiritual understanding, spiritual power, love, health, holiness. Science and Health, page 116. Each synonym has many characteristics, and each is characterized in Mary Baker Eddy's writings differently than the other six synonyms. They also stand in unique relation to each other. For example, mind is characterized by intelligence, law, power, basis, information, action, creativity. The infinite ideas of mind have the nature of spirit, which is characterized as substance, reality, order, the only, strength, divine energy, good. Soul is characterized by identity, ego, self-sameness, rule, spiritual understanding, intact, balance. Mind, spirit, soul as one constitute our principle. Principle is characterized as harmony, divine government, structure, system, science, spiritual power, foundation. Principle explains. Life is characterized by isness, eternality, God-governed individuality, inspiration, method. Truth is characterized by consciousness, the whole, form, deliverer, health, ideal, remedy. Truth uncovers, unveils. Love is characterized as fulfillment, plan, purpose, rest, peace, perfection. Love accepts. Mrs. Eddy tells us, divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system. The God-dictated textbook is laid out in a system which consists of three fundamental categories of being, in which one, the seven synonyms for God, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, constitute the nature of infinite good. Two, these seven synonyms for God operate through a fourfold calculus of being, the city four square. The four sides of the city are the incorporeal, the divine, supreme, infinite, and they refer to the four functions of Word, Christ, Christianity, and science, or seeking, finding, using, being, also known as revelation, translation, demonstration, explanation. Divine action takes place on four levels. Science itself, divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science. When we someday understand the system Mrs. Eddy has embedded in science and health, we will be able to use it, just as we use today mathematics to calculate mathematically. When through spiritual education, quote, thought accepts the divine infinite calculus, all material substances will vanish, swallowed up in the infinite calculus of spirit, unquote. Science and Health, page 520 and page 209. And spirit means infinite good. Why is the system of Christian science not better understood today? Judge Hanna was perhaps the first man to see the system in a textbook. When he approached Mrs. Eddy about it, she said, "Yes, it is all there," but indicated it would take time to unfold and that healing was the present great need. Teaching the system of Christian science in her day would have been like teaching a five-year-old the whole system of music or mathematics rather than starting with simple scales or counting. Mrs. Eddy tells us, "The platoons of Christian science must first be thoroughly drilled in the planar manual of their spiritual armament. Wait patiently on the Lord, and in less than 50 years his name will be magnified in the apprehension of this new subject," unquote. It was just 50 years after she wrote these words that Mr. John Durley of London, England, began to see the system and teach its beginnings to hundreds of students. As a note of interest, it was also just 50 years later, in 1938, that Mrs. Eddy's Place was published in the Christian Science Sentinel and in the Journal. "One day the science of Christian science will be taught in schools and colleges, just as the material sciences are taught today. Quote, if the Bible and science and health had the place in schools of learning that physiology occupies, they would revolutionize and reform the world through the power of Christ," unquote. This is a moment of hope in history, and we should rejoice in it. When I think back and recall how I became aware of this divine system Mrs. Eddy has buried in the textbook, I'm reminded of the metaphysical truth Shakespeare gave when he said, quote, "All things be ready, if our minds be so," unquote. This is the Jacob's ladder from earth to heaven. There is nothing we cannot do if we are mentally ready. The ancients could have had all the wonderful conveniences we have today, even television and the World Wide Web, if their minds had been ready. I am sure all of us can think of how paths have opened up for us when our minds were ready. Although I grew up in Christian Science Church, for me, the path to discovering the system of Christian Science began when I started writing, the last thing I ever thought I would do. How did it all come about? I recall that I had been reading about cruelty to animals in laboratories and was crying uncontrollably when Bill came home one day. After I blubbered an explanation, he said, "Write the newspaper to help stop this cruelty." I did, and was totally surprised when they printed my letter, which I followed with many more. Then one day, Dr. Lamsa, who translated the Bible directly from the Aramaic into English, and who had several times visited us, asked me to edit some of his writings. He spoke broken English, which spilled over into his writings. I got right to work and put everything in good English. I knew when he read my corrections that my editing was a disaster. He kindly explained that the reason his publisher liked his writings was because they were different. Was this a setback? Not in the least. I had gained valuable experience, and Dr. Lamsa went on to become world famous, though obviously not with my help. All things be ready if the mind be so. With each little step, I was making myself ready for the next. After Mr. Eustace's wife passed on, he asked me to edit for him, a job his dear Bessie had always done. And so it went, until finally I was myself selling the words I had poured onto paper. A group of receptive students I met with once a week for 20 years helped me decide what to write. We started by listening to the tapes of Max Kappeler, a student of John Dorley. Max is a citizen of Switzerland, that tiny nation huddled on the banks of the Rhine, famous for its banking, watchmaking, and chocolates, but which will someday be more famous for Max, his metaphysical titan. Along with spiritual-minded Gordon Brown and other highly acclaimed students of Mary Baker Eddy's system, Max Kappeler has done much to educate receptive Christian scientists in the system to which our leader has reduced the divine metaphysics that honors God. He leadeth me. Have you ever thought back over your life to see how divine love has led you forward step by step? Learning Christian science has nothing to do with sentiment and emotion so common in religion, but has everything to do with gratitude for heavenly leading. He leadeth me, O blessed thought, O words, with heavenly comfort fraught. With gratitude, almost with awe, I recall a November day when snow swept across the icy pavement and the thermometer registered 20 degrees Fahrenheit. As dear Bill accompanied me to the depot, the stinging air brought tears to our eyes, and a biting wind wrapped us in its freezing blast. World War II was in full swing. The long train, every compartment overflowing with soldiers, headed for a training camp, blew its shrill whistle and came to a halt. Bill's company had made special arrangements to have the train stop just for me. I boarded the frigid, unheated baggage car compartment as its sole passenger for the 12-hour long ride to my destination. Where was I going? Only the song, He Leadeth Me by Unsought Ways, can answer. A short time before this, someone had casually mentioned the name of a lady living in a distant city. It was Emma Dunn. It must have been God that told me to visit her. Nothing else explains it. I had not contacted Miss Dunn. It never occurred to me to phone for an appointment. Looking back today, more than half a century later, this seems incredible. Arriving in her city, I took a bus to her apartment. When I knocked at the door, she greeted me as though she was expecting me. In a short time, she said, "I think I know why you came." She went to her little treasure room and came back with an association address by a well-known Christian Science teacher, saying, "You can keep it as long as you're in the city." She took me to the basement coffee shop for a sundae. Then I was off to my hotel, where I wasted no time copying the entire address in shorthand. I took the wonderful paper back to her. We had another ice cream treat and said goodbye. I never saw her again. As I headed home to dear Bill, little did I dream how that visit would step by step lead me forward toward the only thing I ever wanted, a better understanding of God. He leadeth me by unsought ways. My next train ride took me to that teacher's doorstep, again unannounced. She was delighted to see me, especially when she heard I could type. She immediately set me to work typing up her next association address. She also invited me to attend her upcoming association, some months away, and I accepted. At that association address, I sat between two ladies, Magdalene Gauss and Isabel Weeks, who became lifelong friends. Magdalene introduced me to the writings of Herbert Eustace. As I have already indicated, he and his writings became a great influence in my life. Magdalene took me on her next trip to visit the Gilbert Carpenter Junior and Senior. Oh, happy day! The Carpenters gave me all the books they had printed. From the Carpenter and Eustace books, which I devoured, I learned much. This was vital and became a link to later leading. In the meantime, Bill and I moved from Mount Vernon, Illinois, to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. There, the Christian Science Church gave a lecture. It just happened the lecture was one I had introduced when he gave a lecture in Mount Vernon. After the Bethlehem lecture, he greeted Bill and me warmly and happily, agreed to go home with us. At the table, eating toasted bread over which he poured hot milk and loaded it down with sugar, he said, "Helen, can you meet me tomorrow about 10:30? Again he leadeth me, O blessed thought, O words with heavenly comfort fraught. At that meeting I was so fortified with all I'd gotten from the Eustace and Carpenter books, I just kept pouring it out. He must have thought I was a candidate for the On and On Anonymous Society. But instead, he finally said, Helen, you should be in the journal. Surprised, I said, oh, no. He countered, oh, yes. It's a convenience to people seeking help. I will see that you are accepted. I, of course, had to furnish all that Boston requires of applicants, but with his help, I made it. This experience led me to John Durley, a teacher I had never heard of before. John Durley used the first journal that had my name in it to send invitations to for his January 1950 practice talks in London. I accepted the invitation. It was there that I learned for the first time of the divine system Mrs. Eddy had incorporated in the textbook. When I reflect on the saga of my quest for the Holy Grail of understanding and God's leading, I am literally driven to my knees in humble and grateful thanks. I know that my progress was not of my own doing. I simply worked to make the mind ready, with no thought where it would lead. He leadeth us by unsought ways. I am sure many who read this have experienced that leading, and we know that leading goes on. In miscellaneous writings, Mrs. Eddy writes, in the desolation of human understanding, divine love hears and answers the human call for help, and the voice of truth utters the divine verities of being, which deliver mortals out of the depths of ignorance. Unquote. I have repeatedly found this true. One morning, as I sat deep in study, suddenly it was as if a voice said to me, go to Switzerland and England and talk with those students who have already done a monumental work on the science and system in the textbook. Unquote. I felt the urge was from God, and so it turned out to be. I looked at the clock. It was 10:30. I called a local airport. A plane left Bethlehem at 1:30. I boarded it after leaving a note on the kitchen table for dear Bill, who was away on a business trip. Arriving in New York City, I was far from the big international airport, but the lady I sat next to was an experienced traveler. Follow me, she said. She led me to a helicopter, which took us both to LaGuardia Airport, and I was soon aboard a plane for Switzerland and England. I shall never forget the love and the instruction I received from Betty Schurter, Mimi Butikoffer, and Max Kapler. They had just written the wonderful compendiums dealing with the seven synonyms for God. Their special teaching and the teaching I had received in England helped me in all the years that followed. Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and ye will be led, sometimes by a strange providence, to the feet of Christian Science, to a new world of light and life. The system and Mrs. Eddy's successor. In time, when science and health is taught in schools and colleges, and we all learn the system the scripturally prophesied little book contains, we will all be able to demonstrate the science of Christian Science, just as we demonstrate the science of music and mathematics. This will enable us to accomplish the Passover, to pass over errors and illusions by seeing their nothingness, to pass over from material thinking to spiritual being. It is an understanding of the operating of the seven synonyms for God that we are, and which reveal our God character, as they unfold on the four levels of spiritual consciousness that will be Mrs. Eddy's successor. This makes each one of us her successor in proportion as the Spirit of Christ accompanies the letter of science. The system laid out in Science and Health enables us to build on a holy spiritual foundation, where we find that our most valuable asset lies in always starting with God, the principle that we in reality are, the divine principle which is our real and true mind. What a triumphal transition this Passover will be! Could there be a greater cause for gratitude and rejoicing, and to become aware of our oneness with infinite good? The universal eternal mind, your real mind, the source of all creation? It only looks like creation, since all good has already existed. Mrs. Eddy has shown us that our only need is to gain the God character, the divine Christ character. As we strive for more of the Christ spirit, Science and Health is destined to show us our absolute, ever-present, and infinite perfection. We will recognize this perfection as we awaken and become the divine love, which in reality we already are. Divine love with which Mrs. Eddy was so fundamentally, so richly, so divinely imbued, enabled her to so completely impersonalize evil that she was able to physically heal even the bitterest enemies among those who'd sought to injure her. Mrs. Eddy's sublime success, the glory of her everlasting victory over the malice, hatred, and persecution her enemies meted out to her, is what the Bible would call the Passover. In Christian Science, we know there is no one through whom hatred can be expressed, for there is only the one being, which I am and which you are. If a million people were directing hate toward you, could it touch you? Of course not. It is only an error in thought. The million are just a big zero, and the hate cannot exist because there is only one divine love, infinitely individualized as you and me and as everyone else. Most of us are asleep in the Adam dream and do not know we are that one, individualized, expressing all infinite goods qualities and perfect activity. So, when it seems that great obstacles and ordeals lie between us and the holy grail of understanding we seek, we should remember the Passover Moses ate with his followers on the eve of their departure from Egyptian bondage, and the Passover Christ Jesus ate with his disciples at the Last Supper on the eve of his crucifixion. Jesus' Passover was followed by his resurrection and ascension. Both Moses and Christ Jesus had been assured of a safe Passover from mortal mind's verdict. They had been assured of the immortality and ever-presence of truth and love, scripturally called the Promised Land. Jesus had prophesied the Passover when he promised the Comforter, the second coming of the Christ, that would enable all mankind to learn how to pass over the illusions of error unharmed. He was convinced of the immortality of his words and his prophecies. He foresaw that his words would finally be accepted and would constitute the Passover for you and me and all. Jesus knew he was passing over the valley of the shadow of death to the promised land of the Comforter, the Christ Science, which constitutes our marriage with infinite good. Of all the disciples, only John caught this Christly message of the Passover, enough to rise sufficiently above the material sense testimony to follow Jesus all the way to the foot of the cross. In that dark hour, it must have been a great comfort to Jesus to have John there, so Jesus could place his dear mother in John's care. Because John thought only of Jesus and not of himself, he had the Christ qualities to which Jesus could later give the great revelation. This revelation would tell all mankind about the woman of the apocalypse and the little book, Science and Health, that would teach humanity how to pass over material sense testimony. Because the book of Revelation is about Christian Science and the second coming of the Christ, Jesus' great revelation to St. John could not be understood until Mary Baker Eddy appeared on earth and fulfilled Jesus' prophecy and promise. Today, when we realize how accurate and true Jesus' prophecy and the revelation to St. John was, it gives fresh assurance that all the other incidents and prophecies of the prophets and the life of Jesus are correct and true. Like John, we must all learn to think not of ourselves, but of how we can best follow in the footsteps of the two witnesses, Christ Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy, who revealed and demonstrated the fatherhood and motherhood of infinite good. The spiritual altitude of Mary Baker Eddy's writing has given us the key to the Passover, from matter to spirit, so that we can learn the truth about ourselves, learn what we already really are, and see ourselves as wedded to the infinite good we call God. At least we can take comfort in knowing that Mrs. Eddy is one with what she's written, and that it will unfold forever. We can walk the holy highway with saints and angels because we have her writings to lead us forward, onward, and upward. To really follow our leader as she followed Christ must be our most sincere desire. To do this, we must lose ourselves in true being. lose ourselves in love for all mankind. We must do as Noah did. He entered into the ark. He closed the door on the deluge of mortal minds' illusions and abode there until the floods of mortal minds' thinking subsided. For us, as for Noah, making the Passover means passing over wrong beliefs, our mortal mind illusions. We must keep before us the vision of reality as we partake of the Passover with Christ. Let us never forget that only growth in Christian character is needed. By studying thoroughly the letter and imbibing the Spirit, we assimilate more of the divine character until the fiery baptism burns up the chaff of error with a fervent heat of truth and love, melting and purifying even the gold of human character. Unquote. Chapter 14. The Manual Will Save the Cause. The Facts Surrounding the Cradle. Have we the slightest idea how Mrs. Eddy for years patiently labored and listened for God's voice in order to bring this science with its system to the world as the second coming of the Christ? She had to record the revelation in such a way that it would not be seen until thought was ready to receive it. When we give Mary Baker Eddy her rightful place in human and divine history, we are not deifying her any more than we deify Jesus when we accord him his rightful recognition. As we look at the early progress of Christian Science, we quickly discover that Mrs. Eddy saw church organization as a temporary phase which Christian Science should quickly outgrow. In 1879, Mrs. Eddy allowed a church to be formed as a Suffer It to Be So Now, to meet the demands of her students who were accustomed to going to church on Sunday. 10 years later, in 1889, she dissolved that church. The dissolution was followed by exceptional growth and prosperity, but the students wanted to organize again. Mrs. Eddy strongly opposed this move. She told them it was not of God, and that they were selling their present prosperity for a mess of pottage. However, when the students were adamant, she reluctantly gave consent. Mrs. Eddy warns that, quote, continued organization retards spiritual growth and should be laid off, even as the corporeal organization deemed requisite in the first stages of mortal existence is finally laid off in order to gain spiritual freedom and supremacy, unquote. These words remind us that in Christian Science, material organization is equivalent to mortal existence. We need to shake off the shackles of the illusory matter world, whether this material organization is in the form of a church or of a mortal body. It is something we must wean ourselves away from if we are not to be buried in it, and if we are to wed ourselves to infinite good. Mary Baker Eddy had no intention of leaving a corporeal organization in place. With the love that yearns, she founded Christian Science in human consciousness. Then, to protect her Christ Science and to prevent her students from being trapped forever, she wrote her church manual. Its object was to prevent the church from sliding or freezing into a self-defeating ecclesiasticism. Prior to the appointment of a fifth director, the work of copywriting the manual, etc., was left to others. But once a fifth director had been appointed, a move God had shown her as a way to terminate material organization, Mrs. Eddy personally took full charge of overseeing the manual and its copyright. The 88th manual is her final manual. It provided the means for students of Christian Science to move forward out of corporeal organization. The manual stipulated that Mary Baker Eddy's approval, consent, and signature in her own handwriting were required for the filling of various offices. Had the manual been obeyed, it would have dissolved the material church organization 6 months after Mrs. Eddy's leaving, because at the June meeting, no officer of the Mother Church could have been elected. Flagrant disobedience to her manual estoppels has today temporarily curtailed the wonderful, instantaneous Christian Science healings, so general, up until the late 1940s. But this, too, is in accordance with Jesus' prophecy to St. John, when, in the book of Revelation, he prophesied, "The devil is come down unto you, having great wrath, because he knoweth he hath but a short time, unquote. Scriptures, Jesus said, cannot be broken. We can take comfort in knowing that when obedience to Mary Baker Eddy's Manual of Stopples is again established, the healing that was so universal in Mrs. Eddy's day will return. There is far more in the manual that has yet been seen. Eternity awaits our church manual. Mrs. Eddy left a perfect plan built into the bylaws of the manual as she left it to bring us out of material organization. The Mother Church should have been dissolved with Mrs. Eddy's passing. Unable to obtain her approval, consent, and signature in her own handwriting, required for filling various offices, it should have reverted to its status as a branch church with the branch church title Mrs. Eddy had given it. Quote, the First Church of Christ Scientist, unquote. Then, since the membership of readers would have had to date from 1910 or before, the First Church of Christ Scientist, along with all the other branch churches, should have continued only until such time as it could no longer fulfill the requirements regarding readers, Manual, page 32. According to the manual, only someone nearly 100 years old could be a reader today, since they had to be members of the Mother Church, which ended when Mary Baker Eddy left. Societies could continue as long as needed. It is clear that all Christian Science branch churches should have been dissolved by this time. All this is brought out in my two books on the church manual. Had these provisions made by Mrs. Eddy been carried out, Christian Scientists would by now have been freed from the drag-on of material organization, free to bless and uplift the race. A primary purpose of my books on the manual is to reveal through Mrs. Eddy's writings the governing error of material organization, and to uncover the steps Mrs. Eddy took for its resolution. By following those steps, which shows the only certain way forward, we demonstrate the continuity of the Church of Christ Scientist. Then the structure of truth and love in our consciousness is assured. The fallacy of corporeal organization. The manual will save the cause, Mrs. Eddy told Professor Herring. It will do so by sweeping away the ecclesiastical hierarchy which has stifled spiritual progress. It will establish government by God. The bondage begun in 1910 has had repercussions that can be felt today. The directors in the saddle at Mrs. Eddy's passing in 1910 were willfully disobedient when they refused to obey her manual instructions to return to a four-member board with no authority over anything except the First Church of Christ Scientist in Boston. Just think of it. Their disobedience and the continuing disobedience of subsequent boards has in many ways kept us from recognizing or becoming aware of our wholeness, our oneness with God, our marriage to God. A Christian Science teacher who has done a monumental work on the glossary in Science and Health, pointed out that the board who disobeyed Mrs. Eddy's manual instructions in 1910 represented Ham, Noah's disobedient son. Ham is defined in the glossary as corporeal belief, corporeal organization, sensuality, slavery, tyranny. Ham's son was Canaan. He followed in his father's disobedient footsteps, just as subsequent boards of directors have followed in the 1910 board's disobedient footsteps. Mrs. Eddy defines Canaan as a sensuous belief, the testimony of that which is termed material sense, the error that would make man a mortal, material organization, and would make mortal mind a slave to the body. Mrs. Eddy was not unaware of what error would try to do after her leaving. She stressed, there is a great struggle before us, and it is for life. I dare not tell you what I know. You will see it some day. The true science will be lost sight of, unless we rouse ourselves. If there is not work done in the line of spirit, not matter, and overcoming of the material way, and if I am not here to still stand, the zeros and the spiritualists will wipe out every Christian Scientist. Now you know what you have to do. Be a transparency for truth. This is the work. Knowing what this science means, get out of a sense of apathy. This is from a letter in the archives. To help us, Mrs. Eddy established a publishing society with no connection with the church, which would continue to operate after her farewell. While the manual provided an orderly method for disbanding the church hierarchy, the establishment of the publishing society paved the way for her great revelation to spread without being tied to a material church structure. But Mrs. Eddy knew that things might not go smoothly. No doubt it was clear to her that the Christian Science Board of Directors would try to evade the directives of her manual. Evidently, she had also discerned the plot of the manual-terminated five-member board to break her trust and take over the Publishing Society, for she urged the three trustees of the Publishing Society to operate on their own and not to disappoint her when she had foiled a demon scheme. Within less than a decade after Mrs. Eddy was no longer at the helm, the dangers she had foreseen and warned against came to pass. The directors took possession of the Publishing Society, and a great wave of ecclesiastical domination washed over the Christian Science movement. In one way, this set the Christian Science movement back incalculably, as the high priests called for the head of every outspoken defender of the estoppels in Mary Baker Eddy's manual. But in another way, it was God at work. One of the heads called for was that of Loyal Gilbert Carpenter, Sr., who had been Mrs. Eddy's secretary in around 1906. His son, Gilbert Carpenter, Jr., told me that when he and his father were called on the carpet before the board of directors, his father was, quote, treated so cruelly that after the grueling session was over, I went out on the Boston Commons and threw myself on the grass and cried uncontrollably, unquote. As Gilbert Jr. told me this, I too began to cry. Quote, suddenly, said Gilbert, it seemed as if Mrs. Eddy was there, comforting me and saying, when my children need me, I will be there. And look, just look what the carpenters did after that. Their accomplishments on Mrs. Eddy's behalf were fantastic. Much of the most important material hidden in the dusty archives of the Mother Church came to them in God-directed ways. They published many highly valued books, besides the material that is in the red and blue books, which the carpenters, when they saw danger on the horizon, asked Richard Oakes to publish in South Africa and England. Ralph Girardi told me these red and blue books were Rare Book Company's best sellers. Once again, we are reminded that the very circumstance which your suffering sense deems wrathful and afflictive, love can make an angel entertained unawares. Much of part two of this book is based on the work of the carpenters. The silver lining in the litigation. Worry sometimes gives a small thing a big shadow, and the pessimist complains about the racket when opportunity knocks. A most disturbing aspect of this ecclesiastical saga was that Boston had its pastures watered by those asleep to the dangers of hierarchical control. But today, after a crescendo of challenges from the biblical remnant and a long overdue tidal wave of anti-Boston sentiment that swept the world, a reform seems to be on its way, as noted by the publishing of the Bliss Knapp book and the promised returning of other biographies favorable to Mrs. Eddy to the reading rooms. Loyal Christian Scientists are happy to see this change, knowing it is destined to free the Christian Science movement from the shackles of material organization. Do we today see the opportunity that knocked when the terminated five-member ecclesiastical board broke Mrs. Eddy's deed of trust to the Publishing Society in 1920? Do we see the silver lining that surrounded the litigation cloud? The church organization was split wide open by the confluence of forces. Because of the director's ugly breaking of Mrs. Eddy's 1898 trust deed to the publishing trustees, thousands of Christian Scientists turned away from the material church organization. The 10-year struggle of the publishing trustees against the greed of ecclesiasticism that would seize everything in the line of power and authority freed Christian Science from the materiality of organization and loosed it for its higher destiny of pure metaphysics, uncontaminated and unfettered by human hypotheses, and divinely authorized." Unquote. Our spiritual journey has nothing to do with a church building or attending church services. Do we now see the blessing in the break from material church activity, which started when the ecclesiastical hierarchy won that lawsuit? Had they not won it, the break with material organization would have been much slower. Do we see how, in freeing all mankind from the handcuffs of the old orthodox form of church going, it freed each Christian Scientist to be a law to himself? Do we now see how it compels each sincere Christian Scientist to find the kingdom of God within his own consciousness? At the time that ecclesiasticism seemed to win in what has been called the Great Litigation in 1920, we thought animal magnetism had been victorious when the ecclesiastical directors won. But today, we see this event opened wide the door to escape from material organization, from what Mrs. Eddy never wanted to establish in the first place. It awakened the biblical remnant, urging them to tell the truth concerning the lie, to bring to light the deeper truths in Mary Baker Eddy's writings, and to go forward in spiritual organization alone. It becomes increasingly clear regarding today's turmoil, which was prophesied in Revelation, that if the religious aspect of Christian Science had been allowed to prosper as in the old days, we would not have been forced to begin to accept the scientific sense of Christian Science that is today coming to the front as we begin to see the system in the science in our textbook. Attitude, determination, discipline, dedication in learning the God character are our ladder to oneness with God. Those who climb this ladder may be materially poor, but they are spiritually rich. Government in the U.S. today. It is not only in religion that material organization needs to be laid off. Evolution in the spiritual realm calls for similar evolution in every other earthly institution. The admonition that continued organization retards spiritual growth certainly applies to nations. The author in her book, America, outlines how the societal and governmental opening up which occurred in the New World made possible Mary Baker Eddy's revelation. It is to be fervently hoped that secular government will continue to move toward individual freedom and responsibility until it can disappear. A friend writes, "The whole purpose and mission of the United States of America is Christian Science." Unquote.